You're getting a view into the locker room that
Except
you don't
you're
normally
getting
see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those listening live at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. Our final two-hour show, as starting next Saturday, we're back to 3 hours. It's after Labor Day. Next Saturday, 3 hours, 9 a.m. to 12 noon. You know the hockey season is getting close when we shift back to 3 hours on Saturday morning. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. We have a jam-packed show for you this Saturday morning. In about 30 minutes' time, we'll be joined by Bryce Salvador, who announced his retirement from the NHL earlier this week in a very personal, very interesting first-person article on the PlayersTribune.com, talking about the battle and the struggle he went through to return to the NHL after suffering a concussion. Really interesting piece. We'll talk to Bryce Salvador about that. And then at the top of the next hour, Tracy Myers from CSN Chicago is going to join us. We'll talk about the Chicago Blackhawks offseason. They've had a number of roster changes. We'll touch on the Patrick Kane situation there, which remains unresolved about a week or 10 days before the start of training camp. But without further ado, I say good morning to my good friends and my colleagues. Richard, Ezzy, good to see you both. How are you doing?
Yeah, doing good. Good morning, boys. Good to have you back, Drew, after a little one-week vacation.
Yes.
Down in Montreal. Very excited to have, you know, Bryce Salvador on. I've always been a big Bryce Salvador fan and a big Devils fan, and it's good that we're going to be able to have him on. And, you know, I was going to say, for the first time, I think, maybe since the draft, I'm really starting to get back more into the hockey mood and starting to really feel it. And obviously we go all throughout the summer, Richie, but you know, it gets a little slow there. And at the end of July, early August, we took the week off, but with training camp starting in less than 2 weeks and the Young Stars tournament next week, it's, you know, you're starting to feel like we're going to have some hockey to talk about here, which is awesome. We love it.
Is that next week already?
Next week. It's amazing. This whole sort of Labor Day week and everything is a little bit screwed up because it's as late as it possibly can be, given that Labor Day is on Monday and it's the, I guess, the 7th, which is the last possible date it can be. So everything seems a little bit, the summer seems like it's been extended for a week.
Well, it also doesn't help that it's been plus 40 in Winnipeg and it's been humid for the last week. So that doesn't really get you into
hockey
mode, right?
Yeah.
But when you start to see more and more Jets around town and more and more, I guess, talk of training camp coming up, you start to get more and more excited. So it's coming up quicker than you think, right?
Well, that's a fair point. As in, let's start with the Winnipeg Jets, as we always do on our programs. And, you know, it's pretty clear that they're going, at this point in time, it's unlikely that they're going to bring any other NHL players into their training camp. They've decided to extend a professional tryout offer to Thomas Raffel, the older brother of Michael Raffel. He's played his entire career in Switzerland. Nobody really knows what to expect of him. So that's sort of, you know.
Yeah, Michael Raffel played on the top line of the Flyers last year, scored 21 goals. So he'll be given a chance. And I think really that shows you that, you know, that they are going to give opportunities to some players to get spots on the third and fourth line.
Yeah.
Because this year they're going younger. And that's really going to be the story, Drew, of training camp in the early part of this season. Who makes the team and how well do these players perform? Who sticks around after 9 games, right?
Yeah, pardon me. I said he spent his time playing in Switzerland. He's actually played in Sweden and in Austria, so I misspoke there. Yeah. But, you know, let's talk about the Jets' lines as we enter into training camp and how you project you think that the Jets are going to look when they hit the ice after the Young Stars competition. They hit that first first exhibition game coming up, really, right very close to now, just a couple of weeks from now. It's amazing that we're going to be seeing them in exhibition action, and the season starts really about a month away from now. So, how do you project the Jets forward group? Let's start with the forwards. How do you think that they're going to lay out as we enter into the 2015-16 season?
I think the key is going to be, you're going to see who the top six are. Is, I think, pretty self-explanatory. Ladd, your first line left winger. Perreault's your second line left winger. You have Little, Scheifele up the middle on the first two lines. And then Wheeler and Stafford. And you might mix it around a bit. And, I think they probably start with Ladd. And, you hear different thoughts as to that, but maybe Ladd, Little, and Stafford, Wheeler, Scheifele, and Perreault, something along those lines. And I think you'll see some shuffling, which is a good thing. To me, the interesting part, there's two interesting parts, and the interesting forward aspect is, what's that third line going to be? Are you going to see Ehlers playing alongside Bermistrov and Lowry? Is that what you're going to see? And if that is what you're going to see, is Ehlers playing the off wing? Interesting kind of player to see if he would play the off wing, being the right side for a left-handed shooting guy. And how do you see a guy like Bermistrov adjusting to playing on the wing and not at center? You're going to have Lowry up the middle. And the contrast in styles there a bit. So to me, that's the key. Because you know what you're going to get from the top two lines. These guys are pretty steady guys, right? Ladd's going to get you pretty much what you expect. Little the same. Wheeler. Stafford and Perreault might be a bit of a wild card, and obviously Scheifele, the young guy. But overall, the talent level there and all that. It's that third line that really will, to me, make or break, very much make or break the season. That third line, how the Jets deal with, their left side on the D and the goaltending are the three keys of the season to me.
Yeah, and really, Rich, I agree with you. The third line is paramount, and then you could really throw in the fourth line as well as a line that you can really throw names into a blender and really your guess is as good as mine as far as what the opening day roster is going to be and what the opening day line combinations are, I should say, and the line combinations are going to be for the majority of the season. I think they're going to change quite a bit in that bottom six. I agree with Rich. I think Matthew Perreault, even though he was a center when he was with the Ducks and the Capitals, I think it's pretty safe to say he's going to stay there. And to me, the big wild card, I don't know if wild card is the right term, but I guess the player that I'm going to be interested to see where he ends up fitting in on that third line or even on fourth line is Bermistrov, because he's a natural center, but he can play the wing. But I think, as Richie said, they like Adam Lowry a lot there on the third line center, so I wouldn't assume that Alexander Bermistrov is going to be the fourth line center. I think he's too valuable and has too much offense to offer for him to be the fourth line center or, for that matter, a fourth line winger. So I agree with Rich. You're probably going to see some combination of Bermistrov and Ehlers, and you've got other players that they signed, but guys like Matt Fraser, Matt Halaschuk, those guys are going to be fourth liners if they're in the NHL. So there's a lot of jobs to win, and did players like Brendan Lemieux, Nick Petan, Joel Armia, do these players end up cracking the roster? I think you're not going to see all of these guys crack the roster because the Jets have a certain amount of players on one-way contracts. Mm-hmm. But you're going to see some youngsters make the team this year. The fact that the Jets didn't go out and sign a Curtis Glencross or a Brad Boys, I'm throwing out names, guys that are UFAs and are still UFAs that the Jets could have maybe got on a one-year, $2 million contract. The fact that the Jets didn't go out and sign these guys, and as you mentioned, Drew, Thomas Raffel, a guy that they're going to give a chance to maybe crack the third or fourth line, it shows you that there are going to be most likely 2 to 3 rookie forwards. And then, as Richie mentioned, then you get to the defense, and even though the Jets are pretty set there and they have 10 defensemen on one-way contracts, it's going to be interesting to see, and again, Richie nailed it, on the left side, are they going to mix up Tobias Enstrom and Tyler Myers? Are they going to put Jacob Trouba maybe with Dustin Byfuglien, which is something that's been talked about, heading into training camp to kind of make them a little bit stronger?
If they were to put Trouba and Byfuglien together, as you said, let me interrupt, which one would you have playing on the left side?
Well, that's the whole issue. That's what Richie's getting at. Because the Jets are so strong on the right side, and then, your left side being Tobias Enstrom, Ben Chiarot, and Mark Stewart, you're going to have to make that decision. And Rich, I would think it would probably be Buff, but the problem with that is he's so strong on the right side that, and so is Trouba. Maybe you move Trouba, but it's going to be interesting to see. I personally think that when Tyler Myers came over from Buffalo, he was such a steadying influence on Tobias Enstrom. I think his defensive awareness, it was a lot stronger than Zach Bogosian. And I think Myers and Enstrom worked out so well. I don't know if they break that up. Because, you know, without a shadow of a doubt, those are your two best defensemen, aside from Trouba. I mean, those are your top three defensemen, Enstrom, Myers, and Trouba. But you can't have all three guys on the first pair, right? So you got to figure out where your strengths are best used, right? So I think that's something else to watch. But, you know, back to what Richie said, I think really it's the forwards here because I think there's a lot of question marks. The defense, yeah, sure, you might move a guy to the left side. Maybe they keep the lines very similar to the deep combos exactly the same as they were last year. So you have Stewart with Trouba and then you have Sherratt with Byfuglien. I think that's probably not as much of a concern for me. It's who's going to end up really replacing that offense that's going to be left by guys like Stempniak and Tolusti and Frolik leaving.
How would you see the defense playing out, Rich?
Well, I mean, if you want to look at comfort levels, then you keep all your guys on the right side where they are, you know, where they like to play. So Troop, you play, you know, Myers and Enstrom again. You play Byfuglien, say, with Sherratt and Trouba with Stewart. I mean, that's going to be your default, right?
Because it's just the basic.
Yeah, and then you have, you know, what happens, who knows, with Klitsam, Harrison, Pardy, Postma. I mean, those guys are all interchangeable. I mean, they're different skill sets, don't get me wrong, but they're not going to be breaking. They're not going to be breaking down barriers in terms of their play. I mean, these guys are, you know, either early 30s or mid-20s in the case of Postma. Like, they're all over 25, those guys, right? So you kind of know what you're getting. It's kind of odd to your deal there. But so if you move a guy over to the right side, and I see Azzy's point.
To the left side.
Sorry, left side, excuse me. But I see Azzy's point. But they had the same problem with Bogosian. And Byfuglien and Trouba have played over in the left side, have not played over in the left side at all, really. Occasionally, I think I don't even think a full game.
No. I don't think so.
Bogosian was the only one, I believe, who ever moved to the left side.
When Trouba came up, they tried to play Bogosian and Trouba. Yeah. They moved Bogosian to the left side, and it didn't work.
Very few right side defensemen play on the right-handed shooting right side defensemen play the left side for whatever reason. You'll see more left-handed shooting guys play the right side. Even then, it depends on the guy, right? But if it hasn't been Byfuglien or Trouba, don't you think they would have done that by now? Because they've had the same problem for a while. So then that leads you to Myers. And I touched on it in the Byfuglien article, and Azzy and I broke it down last week. Well, I mean, in my opinion, Tyler Myers is a smart, really good defenseman. But, I mean, he's got a little bit of fragile confidence. And that's pretty well known. Lost his confidence in Buffalo, can get down on himself. You're going to throw a guy who had a good season into an unfamiliar situation to possibly put his confidence at risk? I just don't think you do that. So while I think it sounds fine to say they're going to play on the left side, and I think it's probably worth a shot with all of them for a period of time, I think, I'm not sure you're going to see that. And, of course, Byfuglien's contract status, which, again, still looms as an issue.
Sure. And Ladd.
Yeah, but Byfuglien more so, I think, because he's the one that I think less likely to sign. That looms as an issue. You know, if you're worried about keeping the confidence of Myers, and obviously Trouba's got his contract year coming up, you know, you might have different things in mind in terms of keeping these guys happy. If Byfuglien is not in the long-term plans, you don't really care if he's unhappy on the left side for a month or two before you trade him. You can deal with that. If you're trying to sign him to a long-term deal, on the other hand, you're going to put him somewhere where he's unhappy and you get on his bad side and he's like, oh, see you later. So there's a lot of factors here. Personalities. People don't, you know, people realize that, but the personalities at play here. Who wants to do what?
When it comes to the goaltending, you mentioned that your three issues are you know, finding that third line top nine player, finding the left side defenseman, and the goaltending.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going with Pavlik and Hutchinson again, and we know that Pavlik was terrific at the end of the regular season. You know, you can quibble with his performance in the playoffs. Some people do. I mean, the Jets were outclassed by the Anaheim Ducks last year in the playoffs. Is that the, you know, how you know, does Andre Pavlik have to be as good as he was at the end of last year for the Jets to recreate and continue to be a playoff team in 2015-16?
He has to be better. He has to be as good as he was, absolutely. I mean, towards the end of the year, guys, with the shutouts, I mean, he was one of the hottest goalies in the NHL at the end of the year. But to me, this is the probably not a question mark for the first time in several years for me, goaltending, that is, because last year Michael Hutchinson surprised a lot of people. People forget. You know, I mean, a year seems like a long time ago. And in the hockey world, it is, because the hockey world is a lot of times, what have you done for me lately? But at the beginning of last season, Michael Hutchinson earned that number one starting spot from Andre Pavlik when Andre Pavlik was given that at the beginning of last year. And when Michael Hutchinson struggled, Andre Pavlik came in and he returned to his form that I don't think we've seen maybe since the Jets' first season coming over from Atlanta. So it's not a question mark for me, because Andre Pavlik proved last year that he could rebound from one of his worst stretches of his career. And the year before, he struggled as well. And so, you know, I think he's got to maintain that level. And, you know, is he going to do it? Well, you know, we could sit here and we could look at his numbers and say, well, you know, he's going to regress a little bit, or, you know, he's due for a slightly worse season. Mm-hmm. But to me, when I look at the Jets, that is not as much of a problem as it was in years past, because Michael Hutchinson proved that he can play at the NHL level. He can play consecutive stretches and he can perform. And then Andre Pavlik has shown that for stretches last year, he played the best hockey of his NHL career. So to me, it's not as big of a question mark as it was maybe going into last season.
I don't think there's any question about his, you know, the fact he has the size in the NHL to play and be effective. It's hard to play as a small goalie, but I think he is what he is at this point, right? Like I've said consistently, you know, he's not as bad as people make him out to be. Certainly he's not as good at times as people maybe hope that he's going to be. But to me, he's your bottom third tier starting netminder in the league. Like, I think he's a starter on some team. He could get pushed to the side and fall below that. Yeah, last year you saw that at times, but I think he's got the talent to be in the 20 to 30 range. He's never, to me, elevated above the 20 to 30 range. And if the team's not good enough ahead of, above him, how do they make it work?
And Richie, I'm not saying Andre Pavlik is
oh,
Marty Brodeur here.
I know.
But when the Jets needed the wins and they needed to get into the playoffs, he got consecutive shutouts.
He proved himself
to me.
He's got skill.
And you know, I've always supported Pavlik, you know, in good times and bad, because I don't think he's a top 10 NHL goaltender, but I do think he's the number one goaltender in the NHL. I think he's proven that much. And I think you got to hope that last year, going to the playoffs for the first time, that's just going to increase his confidence.
We've spent a lot of in the summer talking about Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien's contract. When we come back, we're going to talk about two other players who are going to probably get more money than both Byfuglien and Ladd. That's Kopitar and Stamkos. They're both UFAs after next season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
I'd like to get Steven Stamkos signed an extension. That's my number one priority. We've got some other restricted free agents, a couple other contracts and things we've got to do, but that's the number one priority.
Steve Yzerman talking about Steven Stamkos. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. So this summer, a lot of Jets fans have spent their time worrying about the Byfuglien and Andrew Ladd contract extensions, or the lack thereof. Two other big names that are going to be UFAs after the 2016 season. Steven Stamkos, arguably, if not the best goal scorer in the NHL, then probably, you know, top two between him and Ovechkin, and Anze Kopitar of the Los Angeles Kings. Let's start with Stamkos, because we just heard from Steve Yzerman. He's coming off of a five-year, $37.5 million contract, yearly salary cap hit of $7.5 million. He'll be 26 years old at the start of the 2016-17 season. You just don't see players in their prime become UFAs of his caliber. You just don't when they're 26 years old. I'm trying to think the last player to become an unrestricted free agent, actually hit unrestricted free agency, that has the talent and the skill set of Steven Stamkos. Could he get more than Sidney Crosby makes currently?
Oh, yeah. The question is, does he get more than Taves and Kane?
Yeah.
That's the question. Does he get 11 or 12?
$10.5 million right now for Kane and Taves.
11 or 12? That's the question. You're telling me the Toronto Maple Leafs aren't going to pay him 11 or 12?
I'm sure they are.
You think that? Does he love John Cooper? Didn't play him number one minutes last year. Didn't play him in all the big situations. To me, disrespected him a little bit. Now, it worked in the sense you get to Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final. You couldn't score much there. But you get to Game 6 in the Stanley Cup Final. And the guy, and obviously Johnson and Palat and the guys that you're playing, Kucherov, are producing. But if I'm Steven Stamkos, and guys, I said at the end of the season here, you're not being given everything you want. You're a pending UFA. You're from Ontario. And you see what people pay for Andre Sequeira. 5.5 per year. 30-year-old defenseman. He's got one more season with four goals. What season? With four goals. More than four goals. This guy scores 40 in his sleep. And as you said, Drew, he's going to be 26 years old. So, I mean, who's not going to break the bank for this guy? I think he's in for big money. I think Toronto Maple Leafs are absolutely planning to make it happen. It makes a lot of sense. But don't think they're going to be alone. And for Tampa, you know, you have guys coming off the books next year in Braden Coburn, $4.5 million, and Matthias Olin, $3.6 million. Olin is not really an issue, though, because Olin, you can go over the cap when you're at it. So, he's not a big deal.
Because he's on long-term injured reserve.
Yes. So, it's Coburn, right?
Yeah.
There's not a ton of cash. And then you guys sign Kucherov after next season.
And Killorn,
okay. And then, the season after that, Johnson and Palat are off their 3.3, which are great deals, contracts. So, you got big decisions to make, especially the Canadian dollar. Who knows what it's at? There's not too much more money coming into the revenue stream, is there? Maybe jersey sales, but I mean, even that's not going to be crazy.
It's not going to be an $80 million cap next year.
No, you don't think. So, with all that in mind, you're between a rock and a hard place. So, you pay him $12 million, you can't keep these guys.
I think Richie, I agree with you that I think you could argue that, especially considering some of those deals were signed several years ago, that Steven Stamkos is an $11 million player. At the very least, you'd say that he's a $10 million player. Mm-hmm. Joe Smith actually wrote about this. He's the Tampa Bay beat writer.
Yeah, Tampa Bay Times.
For the Tampa Bay Times, and wrote about this, I believe it was 2 days ago, 3 days ago, and they're having difficulty with Steven Stamkos. And I agree with Rich. There are other variables at play here. You know, you mentioned, Rich, the salary cap and the fact that it hasn't gone up because of the weak Canadian dollar. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned that they have to factor in some of the RFAs that they have to sign, like Nikita Kucherov and Killorn, and then Johnson and Palat coming up in 2 years, so that you have to factor that in. That's when $1 million becomes it comes into play, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, as you mentioned before, I think you have to factor in Steven Stamkos and what happened last year. And even though it was never really admitted publicly, Steven Stamkos didn't have the best Stanley Cup Finals. And you know, he was
a lot of that, I think, sorry, Ezzy, for interrupting, a lot of that, I think, to some extent, had to do with the coaching decisions that Richard referred to.
Yep.
With John Cooper playing him. What did he play him in that first game? 15 minutes?
He
or
wasn't
something?
Playing a lot. Now, to Ezzy's point there, Drew, and I agree, Drew, that the decisions were questionable there, but to Ezzy's point, I mean, he had some struggles throughout the playoffs.
Yeah.
Were on him.
Yeah.
I think a good point that was also mentioned in this article, guys, was that if you go back to Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaf, they signed late in 2013. I believe it was March. In 2013. So, I mean, it's not impossible that Steven Stamkos isn't signed now and they still re-sign him. But they gotta want to sign him now. And you know, Drew, you mentioned, you know, what other UFAs have come up like this. I mean, the in recent memory, 2011, Zach Parise, Ryan Suter. But these players are better than Zach Parise and Ryan Suter, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think Stamkos, I mean,
better than Parise.
Parise is a great player. Yeah. You guys know I love Parise, but when you're talking about Steven Stamkos, one of the best scorers in the NHL, and Anze Kopitar, one of the best two-way forwards in the NHL, and again, Ryan Suter is a top defenseman, but you also throw in guys, Buff could be a UFA, you throw in Brent Seabrook in there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm missing some other ones. I don't have the entire list in front of me.
It's a heck of a list.
It's a really impressive, as bad as this year's UFA crop was, next year's is that impressive. from my perspective, if Steven Stamkos wanted to re-sign in Tampa Bay.
Eric Staal's another guy.
Yeah, Eric Staal's another guy, you're right. If Steven Stamkos wanted to re-sign in Tampa Bay, the deal would be done already. Because the parameters for the deal are pretty clearly defined. You give him the max contract, which is, what, 8 years because he's signing with his own team? And you give him, you know, it starts at Kane and Taves money. So it starts at, you know, $10.5 million a year in terms of a salary cap hit. Maybe you give him $11 million, maybe you give him $11.5 million. But the deal could be done. It's not like this would be a complicated negotiation, I don't think. And then that gives the Lightning a year, a little over a year even, to sort of make the salary cap situation work. The longer that he doesn't get signed, the more it tells me he's not returning to Tampa Bay.
Well, see, I think it is complicated, and I think it goes back to what Richie said. I think Stamkos can argue, and I mean, Jonathan Taves and Patrick Kane, these are top players in the league, but you could argue Stamkos is ahead of those guys as far as offense.
Well, offense, I mean you could argue is, yeah.
He's second only to Ovechkin, right?
In terms of goal scoring, sure.
And you're talking about a guy at 25 years old. And you could sit here and you could say, okay, well, you know, forwards, you know, their goal totals go down. And Stamkos already has two 50-goal years, a 60-goal year, three years over 40 goals. But you got to think that he's going to be a 40-goal scorer, you could argue, for the next 10 years.
Well, if Steven Stamkos wants to re-sign in Tampa, can't he just walk into Steve Yzerman's office and say, give me 8 years and $96 million and the deal would be done?
Well, would it? I mean, you think probably, but would it?
Well,
can he make that work with the rest of the team?
You're talking about Stamkos.
John Cooper, to me, doesn't think Steve Stamkos is probably worth that much money.
Well, then I mean, I'm getting a new coach.
Well, what can you get for him in a trade?
You can get a huge haul
trade. For Steven Stamkos, you get a king's ransom. You're talking maybe not a Gretzky trade. Obviously, maybe Gretzky's a bad example because it was different times and there was money involved and all of that.
But that return would end up being terrible.
But you're talking about one of the best players in the entire league. And he is up there with Ovechkin. He's up there with Taves. And I think you're talking Steven Stamkos. You acquire him. You're another team. You could instantly change your fortunes around. He could turn a non-playoff team into a playoff team.
I want to talk about Kopitar later, though.
Yeah, we'll talk about Kopitar later on in the program. Bryce Salvador is on the line, so let's head to break. When we come back, Bryce Salvador just retired from the NHL earlier this week. We'll talk to him about his career. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
The Curve Crew are back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Shot! Score! Salvador! 1-0! Salvador, net presence in front, and as Lundqvist is going down, it goes right between the legs, and it's that down low pressure again that you were talking about. Callahan can't get there, Strawman can't get there, Staal can't get there. It goes through three Ranger defensemen, and past Lundqvist, that's the ultimate version of a seeing eye shot.
Bryce Salvador scoring for the New Jersey Devils against the New York Rangers. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Bryce Salvador, recently retired earlier this week from the New Jersey Devils after a tremendous NHL career. Bryce, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Do you remember that goal you scored against Lundqvist?
Yeah. It was a great playoffs.
Bryce, obviously we brought you on to talk about your career. You know, 786 NHL games played, 24 goals, 86 assists. You went to the Stanley Cup Finals with the Devils a few years ago. And you retired earlier this week in a tremendous article that you wrote on the Players Tribune talking about your comeback from and your efforts in coming back from taking a slap shot to the face. Well, we'll talk about your entire career, but why did you decide to retire, you announce your retirement via the Players Tribune and, you know, writing that first-person essay? Why did you decide to go about it that way?
Well, I just, it was a real interesting period of my life there that I went through, and I just always felt that it could be a story that could inspire some other people that may be going through some difficult times in their lives, regardless if they played hockey or not play hockey. And that I just, it was just such a unique situation in terms of the type of concussion that I had and just where the concussion talk is nowadays, that there's a lot of unanswered questions just surrounding, you know, head injuries. And I just felt that it was something that, you know, I really wanted to communicate to people so they kind of have an understanding of the process and just how difficult it is to really sometimes find answers. And I felt that while I was still playing, it wasn't the right time, and that it could be distracting. And I was never the player to want to, you know, draw attention to a situation that I was involved in, you know, and be a distraction for my teammates. And so, so that was, you know, the primary reason of, you know, not really talking about it before. And then ever since the Tribune's come out, it's just been an awesome, you know, vehicle for athletes in general, kind of just, you know, tell their story and not have the media, write a story of what they think happened. And so it's just, you know, the timing worked out well, and it just seemed to make a lot of sense. And the Tribune, I worked with Sean Conboy, and he just did a fabulous job of capturing, you know, the essence of what I wanted to write, and the process of going back and forth and, you know, making sure, you know, we had, you know, we wanted.
Well, Bryce, I think I speak for everybody when we all thought it was a very touching article. Mm-hmm. Surely everybody that I shared the article with on social media thought the same. And in that Players Tribune article, you mentioned towards the end that, you know, it meant a lot to you to retire as a captain, and that nobody can take that away from you. How important was it to retire as the New Jersey Devils captain? And also, you mentioned earlier that you were able to play in front of your kids. Your kids were able to watch you play with the Devils.
Yeah, you know, the captaincy, that was just, you know, that was a dream come true. And just, you know, wasn't something I, you know, expected in my career. I really, coming back from you know, missing the year was just all for my kids, and just realizing that, you know, at 35, I think I could have retired then if I wasn't able to come back, and I would have been content, and, you know, with no complaints of the career I would have had up until that point. And you know, just kind of, like I said, one day when I woke up and, you know, talked with my wife and then just realizing that, you know, my kids were at the age where they wouldn't really remember me playing or be able to appreciate that fact, that, you know, it was a great motivational, you know, point in my life, of just that thinking of that and having something to, you know, to kind of motivate me to, you know, to continue to push to come back.
You know, Bryce, you talk about the concussion issues and coming back from that, and, you know, it's really interesting in your article, you talk about how you have to work on your own a lot, and some people don't really understand. You look at a teammate, your former teammate now, Ryan Klo, a guy we've heard has, you know, had more than a few concussions, unfortunately. What's it like in the locker room and maybe even outside of the locker room with player to player in terms of concussions and how to deal with it? And are people more open about it now? And is it likely or possible that a player would tell another player to maybe take a step back?
Oh, definitely. I think it's been the best thing I think that's happened over the, you know, the last several years, is just the awareness that's kind of come around head injuries. And I like to call them head injuries. I kind of stay away from the word concussion because it's too broad. Like, mm-hmm. There's so many, you know, just to label something a concussion, I think, is sometimes not the, you know, the correct, you know, terminology, in my opinion. That's why I just say, you know, head injury. And now, you know, guys are understanding the severity of these type of head injuries. And so the league and the Players Association, everyone's done a fabulous job, was, you know, recently really, you know, given it the proper attention that it deserves, and it's filtering all the way down into youth sports. And so it's great from that fact. And guys are becoming more and more willing to talk about concussions and address them, where it's one of those injuries where, you know, you can't see the injury, right? So, you know, if you got a broken bone, or, you know, you sprain your ankle, your shoulder, like, it's swollen up, it's black, it's blue, it's, you know, you can't walk, and so it's not so subjective. You know, a head injury, it's how you feel. and athletes are are notorious for, you know, playing through all types of injuries, and when you can't necessarily see what the injury is, and other people can't see what that injury is, it's really tough on that player to, you know, try to deal with it. When, you know, like I said in the article, it's like, you know what it takes, you know, the test to return to play is how you're feeling, and when you put, the requirement to come back is like how you're feeling, it's really difficult, because you instinctively you want to play and you want to be there, and so it puts you in a tough situation. So that's what's been good in terms of now all the protocols and the baselines and the tests. I think it's been important because it takes that pressure off the player to, you know, have maybe a certain amount of pressure of just coming back, because they want to be back, when now you can say, hey, like, you know, you're off still, and, you know, look at what these tests are saying. And so it takes some pressure, and you know, that's probably the easiest way to explain it. Cause when you break a bone in, 6 weeks, the cast comes off. Okay. There's a definitive, you know, hey, there's the time, it's coming off, you're good to go. And so that's, you know, head injuries are completely different.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Bryce Salvador. Bryce retired from the NHL earlier this week after a 786-game career with both the St. Louis Blues and the New Jersey Devils. Bryce, in the article, you talk about Lou Lamoriello giving you the chance to come back to the Devils after you had missed the entire season, getting over the concussion or the head injury problem, as you just referred to it. How surprised were you that Lou Lamoriello sort of welcomed you back with open arms? Do you think that most NHL general managers would have handled you the same way that Lou Lamoriello did?
You know, it's hard to say. You know, it really comes down to, I think, the relationship. I had a unique relationship with Lou, and you know, and but missing a year at the age of 35, I think, you know, it's a risk. It's a risk for you know, a general manager to, you know, to put that much faith in the player that, you know, that's coming back from a head injury. And and, you know, like I said, I think that a lot of general managers would have found a real, you know, they would have did it respectfully and politely, but, you know, maybe not even want, maybe put me in that situation either, right? So but Lou respected me when I said, look, I'm 100%, I'm ready, I'm healed, and I'll be back. And and so I had a strong enough relationship with Lou that he knew that if I was saying that, I wasn't lying. Like, that I was healed, I was ready to play, and if something happened, it wouldn't be because of this past injury. It would be something completely different. And so I think, you know, that's why I say that. Because of my relationship with Lou, you know, he took my word.
You know, Bryce, you're known as a defensive defenseman, a punishing defenseman, and you know, rightly so. But you go back to that 2012 playoff run, and you were playing the role of Scotty Niedermeyer there. I was, you know, going back and looking at the stats, and you had 14 points, and you were third on the Devils that year during that run to the Stanley Cup Finals against the LA Kings. I wanted to ask you about that run, because the New Jersey Devils surprised a lot of people getting back to the Stanley Cup Finals there. What was that like for you to go to the Stanley Cup Finals and really just tell us what that run was like? Because, you know, as I said, a lot of people, you know, you surprised a lot of people by going to the Stanley Cup Finals. But you guys definitely deserved it because you had a great team.
Yeah, when I talk about that run, I always just, you know, talk about how, you know, how special a team can become when everyone's pulling in the right direction and you have a certain feeling in the room. And we had a lot of adversity and struggles throughout that year. And, you know, I had a personal story, other guys had personal stories. And it was just really interesting to see what happens when you have a full team of people all pulling the same way and believing the same thing, willing to sacrifice. And you really see what can happen when everyone starts believing. And it was just a great experience to be a part of. And, you know, obviously it would have been, you know, the best feeling to, you know, icing on cake to win the Stanley Cup. But just for the fact our team to get as far as we did, you know, it was a great feeling. And, you know, we came up against a team that, you know, they had, you know, their own stories and their own sacrifices and, you know, a lot of game sevens they went through. And so, you know, when you, it was just a great energy, you know, that series of just, you know, a lot of, you know, how two teams had, you know, come together to meet in the finals.
Was there one series that year, Bryce, that stood out for you? I mean, you have Henrique's double overtime goal in round one. Then you play Philly, who had upset Pittsburgh and was considered the favorite over you guys. And then you play the Rangers, who we know that the Devils fans hate more than anybody. And then, of course, Los Angeles. But is there any one series, maybe those first three, that stands out more than the others?
Well, it would definitely be the Rangers series. I think it was just, you know, it's really tough to put words to just the energy and just the atmosphere in the New York area and New Jersey area of that. That was, you know, for the Ranger fans and the Devils fans, that was the Stanley Cup. It was, it was amazing, you know, a series to, you know, people would be stopping at your house and, you know, putting things up on your lawn and, you know, good luck. It was just, it was surreal, you know. So that was by far you would, you know, that would be the series that really stood out in just in terms of, you know, just the atmosphere and just the energy.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Bryce Salvador discussing his NHL career. 786 games played, 74 playoff games with both St. Louis and the New Jersey Devils.
Hey, Bryce, you look at your teammates over the, you looked at your teammates over the course of your career and your long career, and I guess my question for you is, who is the best defenseman you ever played with? I mean, if I look at the roster, I'm probably from afar saying it's one of Al MacInnis or Chris Pronger, but from your perspective, who was it?
You know, that's a tough question because I think you play with a lot of great, you know, players just in general, and so many of them are, you know, were just, you know, different individuals. And yeah, I was just fortunate to come into the league and have my first game, you know, against Phoenix, and I look over and I'm starting and there's Al MacInnis to my right. And you know, I don't know how else you, what better way to start your career when, you know, you're starting and that's who, who's your D partner. So I think, just, you know, being fortunate to, you know, to play, I was his dedicated partner for about two seasons. And so, and I sat beside him, it was Mr. MacInnis, you know, can I get you some water? Can I get you a towel? What can I get for you? And I think it was an eye-opening experience playing with him because of, you know, all that he had done, and to see, you know, him be a true professional was a learning experience for me because you would just assume when you get there that these guys, you know, just are lucky or they're just born with talent and it just comes naturally. But then very apparent real quick in my career that a lot of these guys that are Hall of Famers and have done great things, they work for it. They, you know, Al never complained. He came to the rink every day. Hardly missed any practices, you know, just played through injuries. And here's a guy with Stanley Cup going to Hall of Fame, and he was just a true leader. And it just became something that was consistent among all these Hall of Fame guys that I played with, that they're all had, you know, this same competitive, same professional and respect for the game demeanor around them, where it was just really fortunate to learn from these guys and play with them. And but you know, obviously Al MacInnis is right up there as, you know, the best D partner that I played, you know, but to learn from a guy like Chris Pronger and how to advise and, you know, be respectful. And it was just, that was, like I said, I was pretty fortunate.
Bryce, you also mentioned in the Players Tribune article that you're going to stay with the Devils organization and keep working with the young players. Have you talked to Ray Shearer? Do you have a defined role yet, or has that not been something that's been clearly defined yet?
No, it hasn't been clearly defined other than I've talked with the president and Ray, and we just know that I'm going to be involved. I'm already actively involved in youth hockey. I have been for many years, and especially in the New Jersey area. And So it's not necessarily, I don't really necessarily need a title other than they want me to help out. I want to help out, and it's going to be great for the New Jersey area because I'm excited about, you know, being involved on an ongoing basis in whatever capacity that might be. And so, you know, like I said, I'm not a title guy. I don't, you know, don't need to have an official title.
Bryce, you cracked into the league in the year 2000. I mean, you're from Brandon, Manitoba. I'm not sure if you grew up as a Jets fan like the guys in this room did, but it was a kind of special for you to...
Dale Howard, Chuck.
Yeah, of course. Was it special for you to come back through town after you got into the league when the Jets had already left?
Yeah, it was one of those memories that'll rank up there, just energy. And it was actually, I don't know how many years I've been in the league when that first game, but that was the first time I felt nervous in a long time. You know, you come back and then you just see, it's a great building. The energy of the fans there in Winnipeg, it's an intimidating building to come play in. And so, like I said, it was the first time in a long time that I was nervous to play a game. And it was weird. Like, even normally I'm a funny guy in the locker room before, and, Japanese guy and stuff like that. And I was stumbling words, and, it was just kind of, it was weird. Right. And, but you know, like I said, it was a special moment, and it was nice to play there and have my family, be able to see a game in Winnipeg.
Bryce, we'll let you go on this last question. Obviously, you're from Brandon, Manitoba, and last year was a bit of a down year for the New Jersey Devils in terms of on ice. But a bright spot and a guy that we really like in this room is another guy from Brandon, Manitoba, a young defenseman named Damon Severson. Can you talk about sort of Damon's game and how you see him progressing? And, did you take him under your wing a little bit? The veteran leader with the young rookie, both of you from the same city growing up, you sort of have obviously similar interactions, both of you being Western Hockey League guys.
Yeah, he's definitely a player, and he has an unbelievable ability to see the game, and it's just become apparent that the D-men coming into the game now are they're phenomenal players. There's just a different skill set. They can all skate, they can all shoot, and it's you're seeing the game improving, and the players are just phenomenal, especially when you have the group of D now coming in. It's just the game is becoming so fast and so great. And Severson's definitely, one of those guys that, he continues to develop the way he is. He has an opportunity to be, an impact D-man. And, last year, unfortunately, he had a bad, foot injury. And that kind of set him back a bit. But just handled it well. And like I always say, adversity always, defines a player. And so, he had a little adversity last year, and I think he's going to be better for it.
Bryce Salvador, a tremendous NHL career, one you should be quite proud of. Thanks very much for joining us this morning. All the best in retirement, and hopefully we'll see you coming through Winnipeg on occasion with the New Jersey Devils still.
All right, thanks.
Take care. Thanks very much, Bryce. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Pittsburgh Penguins winning the Stanley Cup a couple of years ago in Detroit. Apparently, they're now worth $750 million. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. $750 million, for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah. In the annals of ridiculous valuations. I like watching Dragon's Den. I don't know if you guys have ever seen the Dragon's Den, the TV show, or the Shark Tank. I think it's the U.S. equivalent. Mm-hmm. But they bring on these people who have these very small businesses that are just fledgling, and they come out and they, hello, Dragons, I'd like to offer you 10% of my company for $1 million.
Well, I actually went on Shark Tank, and I asked Mark Cuban for $4 million for 5% of Illegal Curve Hockey.
Yeah, so right, yeah. So the valuation of Illegal Curve Hockey was about $80 million based on that or something. And, and that's always the part that cracks me up the most is how these people, just pull these numbers out of thin air about the valuations of franchises. The Pittsburgh Penguins are a marquee NHL franchise. They're, you know, oftentimes they're up there in the top five, probably maybe the top 10. But $750 million for the Pittsburgh Penguins is a ridiculous asking price.
I don't know if it's ridiculous. I don't know. I don't have an MBA. I'm not a certified financial analyst. So I don't know if $750 million.
I want to meet the person who's going to give you access to their money.
But, I mean, if we're talking about the Winnipeg Jets have got to be worth close to $750 million, no?
Has you? What are you thinking?
I don't
think
so.
500 million?
What do you got in that coffee?
It has to. I mean, the Winnipeg Jets are a valuable franchise, but at some point in time, it comes down to profit. And I think the Jets are very profitable, but they're not $750 million worth of,
this
evaluation.
It doesn't shock me because when you look at some of the other franchises, the Dallas Cowboys are, what, $3 billion?
Well, the Dallas Cowboys and the Pittsburgh Penguins are two very different teams.
No, I know, but what I'm saying is $750 million compared to that number doesn't seem that astronomical. I mean, look at Drew. The Pittsburgh Penguins have a brand new arena, or fairly new arena.
Mm-hmm.
It's, what, 5 years old, 7 years old, whatever it is. And they have a ticket, a season ticket base that's pretty solid. They're a franchise that's been very successful. I mean, I don't know if this is too high or too low, but it goes back to what we talked to Mike Colligan about earlier in the summer. You know, it's surprising that Mario Lemieux, to me, wants to sell the team. And obviously, it's his prerogative.
Yeah, if he can get $750 million for it, sure he wants to sell the team.
Well, sure. But, you know, it's just it because of the fact that, you know, Lemieux took over the team because he was owed salary back in the early 2000s, and you kind of just assume that Mario Lemieux was always going to own this team. But you're right. Him and Ron Burkle have not gotten along, and that I imagine is playing a factor in this, Richie. But when you look at how hard it is to get into the NHL, whether it's the expansion process or relocation, Richie, I wouldn't be surprised if a team, an owner, is willing to pay this money.
Is it really hard to get into the NHL? They invited 16 people to submit bids for their expansion, and only two people showed up.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Well, there's an interesting article on Forbes this morning saying that, I can quote it, while there have been reports in recent days that owners Mario Lemieux and Ron Burkle want $750 for the NHL team, those reports are wrong, written by folks who know nothing about how team sale prices are calculated. Now, I don't think Rick Westhead knows nothing. He's quite a knowledgeable guy. But what he's saying is team value should be calculated as enterprise values, the writer says. That is, the value of the team and the economics of its arena are the sum of equity and net debt. So he's saying that the $750 figure includes $400 million for real estate development on the land where the team played before it moved to the new arena.
Mm-hmm.
So there's different parts here, as Drew, that are playing into this. I mean, it's worth whatever you ask for it in the sense of the Clippers sold for $2 billion. I realize it's in L.A., but they sold for $2 billion and didn't even own the arena.
But Rick Westhead says, Richie, in the article that, and we knew this already, that Gary Bettman and the NHL owners want $500 million for an expansion team, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you consider that, and you consider that the Carolina Hurricanes are reportedly worth $450 million. I don't know, $750 million. It seems about right.
I don't believe the Carolina Hurricanes are worth $450 million. That's the. I think the problem is that they might be worth it, but what are they actually going to get?
Sold.
Those are two very big, two very different numbers.
And there's two factors here. I mean, I'm not a businessman, as you mentioned.
But you play one on TV.
Yeah, but I mean, the truth is, how much is it worth on an annual basis in terms of actual income generation? How much is it worth in terms of valuing it? An eventual sale.
Well,
For example, if you buy it for $80 and sell it for $200 and lose $5 million every year, you're not as bad shape as that's like the whole Ottawa Senators thing. Mm-hmm. Oh, losing money. Well, how much has your value gone up in the franchise?
Sure. Ken Campbell on the Hockey News, talked about the same issue, and he said that by estimates, the Penguins make about $15 million a year.
That's profit.
Profit.
Yeah.
Income. $15 million a year.
So for a purchaser, aside from a guy who wants a toy.
Yeah.
Where else can he make that money without as much time and effort? You know, so I mean, the guys who are talking about purchasing this, unless it's a toy, and I'm sure you'll hear Mark Cuban, although he's not interested in it, but a guy from Pittsburgh, guys like that, mm-hmm. you're going to hear about it because that's really what it becomes, toys for rich people. And I'm not saying that in a derogatory way. I mean, that's what happens. They don't necessarily buy
just vanity purchases.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm not in a position to make any vanity purchases, except for an actual vanity, like for my bathroom. That's it. That's all I can afford.
Or a donut.
Yeah, a donut. Let's go to break. Tracy Myers, CSN Chicago, going to be joining us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Shortly past 10 in the morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Drew Mindell alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program from CSNChicago.com, the Chicago Blackhawks insider, Tracy Myers. Tracy, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
How was the vacation, Tracy?
The vacation was wonderful, yeah. Great thanks to my bosses for giving me the time off, with them having such a long year and everything. It was very nice for them to give me a very extended vacation. So, yeah, it was wonderful. I love getting the opportunities to go to Europe, and thankfully this job has afforded that to me. So it was very nice.
I really enjoyed the pictures on Twitter, by the way.
Thank you.
We apologize for him being that creepy this early on in the interview. Usually he waits a couple minutes in before he gets that creepy.
Well, it is the weekend, so.
Yeah, all rules. There's no rules on the weekend. Tracy, obviously we brought you on to talk about the Blackhawks off season, and obviously the season ended quite late, and it ended successfully with the Stanley Cup being raised in Chicago, and then sort of since then, you can make the argument it's been a little bit downhill in that a lot of roster changes, and then you have this situation involving Patrick Kane that's hanging over the franchise with, we're a week or 10 days away from training camp, and no one's quite sure if he's going to be at training camp. Assuming it's not resolved in the next, couple weeks, do you think Patrick Kane is going to be at training camp with the Blackhawks?
That's a big question. And my opinion, and I'm not basing this on anything, I know, because nobody really knows anything right now. I would be surprised if he is at camp for no other reason than, the distraction level is going to be high anyway. It doesn't matter whether he's there or not. I think it's just going to be that much higher if he is there. You've got a situation where he's not talking about this and nobody else is really talking about this, and understandably so. There's so much still unknown, and everything's pending and everything's still being investigated. So I don't know, just knowing how much the Blackhawks like to avoid, undue attention and everything and just distractions, I would be surprised if he's at camp. That's just my thought right now.
Tracy, you mentioned that Patrick Kane isn't saying much and the team isn't saying much. And this isn't a scenario, I guess, where there are a lot of moving parts and you hear that, there are witnesses being subpoenaed and anything. I guess, can you update us on where we're at right now as far as, where this is going and why there's a good chance Patrick Kane might not be in training camp in a couple weeks?
Well, I don't know. I mean, as far as the legal side of it, it's very hard for me to say anything because I'm not a lawyer. I have not been in Buffalo following the investigation. When things really started, I was overseas. So I think I know as much as anyone just reading what's coming out of Buffalo. From what those stories are saying, it sounds like this is just part of the process in an investigation where you have witnesses and everybody going in front of the grand jury. So, like I said, from the legal standpoint, there's not really a whole lot I can say because I'm not too skilled on that side. But, I'm just speaking, knowing the Blackhawks and them wanting to keep the focus where it needs to be right now is why my opinion is what it is as far as Patrick Kane being at camp or not at camp. So, that's why I'm thinking there's a pretty good chance he won't be. But again, that's a week and a half away, and I'm sure a lot of it depends on, you know, what happens in this time frame.
Tracy, did you have a chance to hear the Jonathan Toews interview on TSN 1290?
I did. I heard it. I listened through to it late Thursday night, and I listened to it again yesterday.
What did you think of Jonathan Toews' comments regarding Patrick Kane?
You know, I guess if nothing else, I was surprised that he talked anyway, given once again, you know, the Blackhawks always being very cautious about having anybody talk when there's things that, you know, that go awry, or if there's something going on with the team internally that they're trying to take care of or what have you. Now, Jonathan Toews being who he is and being a captain, we all know how very well-spoken he is, and he handles himself very well in a lot of situations. So, given the subject, it's such a touchy subject. I thought he, answered it, I think, as best as he could. I was kind of surprised, if nothing else, he said, listen, this is really something I can't talk about right now, but I think he couched it in as good a terms as he could, and certainly put in enough language as, as of now, this is how we're approaching it and everything, and keeping everything in the moment and realizing that things could change and not commenting on that, but just, trying to give as much as far as what he can say right now, which isn't a whole lot.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Tracy Myers from CSN Chicago, discussing the Chicago Blackhawks and their offseason.
Tracy, regardless of the results of Patrick Kane's, and if he's charged or whatever it may be, if he's not charged, clearly this has been negative attention has been pointed to the Blackhawks' direction, and the Blackhawks are, as some of your colleagues have pointed out and you pointed out, pretty image-conscious organization.
Yeah.
As a result of that, do you think that there is a chance, at least higher than 5% chance, that Patrick Kane is possibly put on the market?
Oh, I think there's a chance, yeah. I've been told, and I don't think this is a big secret, here in Chicago or even throughout the NHL, that that after what happened in Madison, that the Blackhawks pulled Patrick Kane aside and said, "Listen, we cannot have this anymore. You can no longer put this organization in a bad light. You can no longer put yourself in a negative light, and we will not take this kind of attention anymore." So that's the big gray area now. Is even if he's not charged, is just what happened here with the negative light coming about and with the situation of him putting himself in a bad situation again, is that enough to make the Blackhawks cut ties? And that's why they're being very prudent. There's so much still unknown out there. It's once again the Blackhawks having to, go into hiding, tell everybody to keep quiet, and once again trying to figure out what to do about this situation, because this star player, and as we know, not the first time where he has brought this kind of attention on the organization and onto himself. So they have a lot to think about, and I would not be a bit surprised if, possibly sending him to another team is one of the considerations. Now, I do not know if that's absolutely set in stone, even if he's not charged. But, to say that there's a 5% or more chance that it could happen, I think there's absolutely a chance that it could happen.
Do you think that, Tracy, it's interesting, do you think that it's his contract, the $10.5 million, would be a factor as well? I mean, the realities of the situation are, you see the way Los Angeles, and some have been skeptical of the way the Mike Richards and the Slava Voynov situations have been handled, and had they not been, if their respective productivity played a factor, maybe it did in their decision making. If Patrick Kane was, say, making $4.5 million, do you think it'd be less likely they'd be possibly willing to move him?
I don't know if it would come down to that in this particular case. And yes, we know the Blackhawks are having their money situations and everything. But I think if it would happen, it would still come down mainly to, the same player making the same mistakes and bringing the wrong kind of attention onto himself and onto the organization. I think that looms larger than anything. And like we've said, you know, we all know the Blackhawks, and every team, I think, talks about, you know, the integrity they want to keep with their image and what have you. But probably no team more so than the Blackhawks. They trumpet this quite a bit. It's very, very important to them. So I think that would loom larger than the money. You know, obviously it is a huge contract, but I think the behavior and what happens with that is going to loom larger than the money situation.
Tracy Myers is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Chicago Blackhawks. We're discussing Patrick Kane. Tracy, wanted to move away from Kane for a couple minutes and talk about the Blackhawks offseason. We knew after they won the Stanley Cup that it was going to be, there was going to be upheaval with the roster. We had heard, you know, rumors about Patrick Sharp, and we knew that they were going to be tied up against the salary cap. You know, as it's all said and done, Patrick Sharp goes to Dallas. Brandon Saad goes to Columbus. How do you think the Blackhawks did this offseason in terms of retooling their roster to be under the salary cap and, you know, trading away some of the players that, you know, in an ideal world, they probably didn't want to trade away, and in terms of the return they got back in exchange for them?
Well, I think they did pretty well under the circumstances. I mean, listen, you know, this is the salary cap world. This is the world that every hockey team lives in right now. You know, there's a price to pay for the success. And when you look at, you know, what the Blackhawks have been able to do with the salary cap the last couple of years and still win 3 cups in 6 seasons, it's pretty impressive. But it was going to reach ahead this year with Taves and Kane's contracts kicking in. You know, with what they've been able to get back, you know, I know Marco Dano was a big up-and-coming catch. I think more people gave that more credit than anything with the Columbus move. You wanted to get a center in return because you've been weak up in that area for a while here. You got that. I think people are excited to see what Panarin can do here. I don't think it hurt to get a player like Viktor Tikhonov just for no other reason than you've got a couple of Russians here, and especially making a guy like Panarin comfortable. That helps. We all realize the situation that the Blackhawks were in with the cap and everything. With those players, with Trevor Daley, you know, I think he needed a change of scenery. I think this will do him well. I think the Blackhawks did pretty well under the circumstances of realizing, okay, there's some ties we're just going to have to cut. There's no choice. So let's try and get as much back in return.
Tracy, we got one more question for you here. You wrote about this earlier this week for CSN Chicago. It was about Antti Raanta. Kind of a bit of a weird story, and, you know, I recommend, you know, our listeners read the article. Maybe we'll post it here on Twitter. But, you know, he was quoted in a Finnish magazine saying something along the lines that, like, he wanted Chicago to get knocked out by the Nashville Predators in the first round. I guess as far as these comments go, do you think this is just a guy who was kind of upset that he was beaten out for the backup job by Scott Darling? And I guess as a, you know, corollary to that, do you think that Antti Raanta has played his last game in Chicago?
Well, I mean, he's gone anyway, as far as he got traded to New York, you know, so.
Oh, sorry, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he got traded to the Rangers.
I missed that one.
Yeah. so he definitely wasn't going to be back anyway. He got traded around, you know, it's been a little bit here, but, you know, and especially as writers, you know, we sit here and, you know, some of us lament the fact that there aren't that many characters in the game these days. There aren't a lot of guys who just say what they feel. And then an article like this comes out, and some writers are like, oh, should have said that and everything. First of all, you know, we need to make up our minds what we want. Do we want people to be honest about how they may have felt at a particular time, which is what this is? This is Raanta, who at the time, you know, was talking about a specific time in his career when he was very angry, he was very upset, he was very frustrated. And he said, you know what, this is what I thought at the time. And, you know, it's kind of disappointing because you'd like to think, okay, you know, you've got teammates who are fighting to win a playoff, and it's terrible to say about them, even though you and the coach were at odds. But at the same time, he was human. This is how he felt. This is what he was thinking. And, you know, when I talked to the author of the article, and his point was, listen, this is a massive story, and it is. I finally read the English translation this morning. It is a huge story. Mm-hmm. And it's such a small part of it was his time in Chicago. It was also, you know, the tough times he had, you know, as far as his schooling back in Finland, and also, you know, his coming up as a goalie and things that he had to go through and stuff like that. So I understand the writer's point of, okay, yes, he said it, but it was such a small part of the story and got blown up. Well, that's what we do sometimes, you know. You know, the thing that, and I never talked to Ronta, but he, I know he's told several outlets and he never said it. I think he did say it and, you know, is just now thinking maybe I shouldn't have. If you said it, if you felt that way, fine. You know, I mean, things happen. We all get angry. We all say things that, you know, maybe they're not the best things to say, but if you feel them, okay, whatever, you know. You know, he's a very colorful character. We've always known that and stuff. And just because he always gave this impression of being happy doesn't mean that he can't get frustrated, angry, and what have you. So I had no problem really with the quote itself, knowing after reading the story especially that it was just how he felt at that particular time, and that's what it is, and you have to look at it in that time frame.
In this day and age, when you get a player to speak in something other than cliche, exactly. It's we should be appreciative of all that.
Exactly, and it's a double-edged sword, and you know, another writer said is like, hey, at least he's, you know, not the same old, you know, dry quote and everything, mm-hmm. And yeah, there's a lot of truth to that.
Anything on Marcus Kruger, still RFA 2 weeks ahead of training camp?
Still up, you know, I mean, just given everything that's going on right now, I think it's just one more thing on the list. And, you know, considering everything that the Blackhawks are thinking about, I still think he gets signed, but obviously they have a lot of things to work out surrounding that may involve that.
Tracy Myers covers the Chicago Blackhawks for CSNChicago.com. Tracy, appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Take care, Tracy. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we'll discuss Anze Kopitar and what he's due to receive as a UFA next season.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is sponsored by the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba's 40th annual luncheon. Philanthropy is a key pillar in a strong community. For over half a century, the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba has been making a philanthropic impact, providing funding to both Jewish and non-Jewish community organizations alike. On October 29th, join the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba at its 40th annual luncheon featuring a keynote address from Rick Frost, CEO of the Winnipeg Foundation, on the topic of sustaining our culture of generosity. For more information or to purchase tickets to the 40th anniversary luncheon, visit jewishfoundation.org or call 204-477-7520. Gentlemen, earlier on in the program, we talked about Steven Stamkos and his future in Tampa Bay. I want to talk about Anze Kopitar, also set to become an unrestricted free agent after the 2015-16 season, and his future in Los Angeles. According to LA Kings general manager Dean Lombardi, he said to Los Angeles Kings insider John Rosen that, quote, they are not even in the ballpark, in the same ballpark, in regards to contract discussions. Kopitar is coming off of a 7-year, $47.6 million contract, an average annual value of $6.8 million, and he'll be 29 years old at the start of the 2016-17 season. What can Kopitar expect to get? A little bit older than Stamkos. A lot of the things he does so well might not show up necessarily on the stat sheet. What can Kopitar expect to get next year as an unrestricted free agent right on the cusp of his 30s?
Well, Drew, you're looking at a player who's probably not going to get the same amount of money as Steven Stamkos just because he doesn't offer the same offensive production that Steven Stamkos offers. But as we know, Anze Kopitar was a big part of both the LA Kings' Stanley Cup winning runs. And Kopitar, to me, is in a way a little bit more interesting than Stamkos. Stamkos is interesting because of the fact that, you know, he kind of looked like he had some issues with John Cooper during their mm-hmm. Stanley Cup run last year, Richie. But with Andre Kopitar, you got to think that they want to get him signed long term. But what's holding them up are a lot of the issues that they've been dealing with this offseason. What's the future of Slava Voynov? What's the future of Mike Richards? Mm-hmm. They terminated his contract, but the NHLPA has appealed that. And, you know, Huss was talking about it earlier this week on HNL, and I know Huss has been very vocal, and even Gary as well, about how the LA Kings have gone about terminating Mike Richards' contract. I happen to think, I agree with Huss, that I think it's ridiculous that they terminated his contract without knowing how this whole thing is going to play out. So you don't know if that salary is coming back, Richie, as far as Mike Richards. And, you know, I think we could all agree that there's a chance, a very good chance, that both Mike Richards and Slava Voynov never play for the LA Kings again and maybe never play in the NHL again. I'm not saying that I wouldn't like to see a guy like Mike Richards play in the NHL again. And once he's, you know, straightened his life out a little bit,
he'll play in the NHL again. Richards, I think.
I think.
I don't think it won't be in LA. No, I think the contract's going to be put on the books. I think he'll just be bought out.
It's a possibility.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I think these are looming. And then another factor, which I don't think some realize how big of a factor this is and how this has really put a cap crunch on teams, is the Canadian dollar. The Canadian dollar weakening mm-hmm. and the salary cap only going up by, what, a couple million bucks has really affected teams' abilities to sign, especially some of these unrestricted free agents that are left on the market. I think if the salary cap goes up $2 or $3 million, you see guys like Curtis Glencross and Brad Boys and Cody Franz and signed already. So I think that that's mm-hmm. factoring it in as well, Richie. Even though the salary cap didn't go up a lot this year, it's not just this year, Rich. It's the year after and the year after. I think there's mm-hmm. there's a big worry amongst teams that the salary cap is going to only go up a couple million dollars for not only this year, but the next couple of years. And that's why they're looking at their kind of long-term projections. They're saying, I don't know if we can afford to pay Andre Kopitar $9, $10 million a year when the salary cap isn't going to go up that much. So I think all these factors are contributing to why he hasn't been signed yet. But by the way, I believe both these guys are going to sign with their teams. I don't think Stamkos is going to Toronto. I think Stamkos is signing long-term in Tampa, and I think Kopitar is signing long-term in L.A.
Ooh, I don't think Stamkos resigns in Tampa.
I agree with that one.
I think Kopitar does resign in L.A. Are they in the same ballpark? No. What he does fits so well with how he plays fits so well with that style. I mean,
yep.
He's not the fastest player in the league by any means. But when he gets going, he can real move. Him, Quick, and Doughty are the heart and face of that faces of those of that franchise. You have Quick signed long term. You have Doughty signed for the next four seasons at $7 million. And I think he's the best defenseman in the league.
Yep.
And you got Kopitar. This is kind of when that contract limit, you know, the 8 years for you retaining your own players, it hurts and helps you in a sense. It hurts you in that you can't spread out that money like you could before, like the Blackhawks, and even the Jeff Carter deal. They have $5.2 million, very reasonable. It helps you in that you're not going to be able to pay Kopitar for more than his age 37 year, so you're not going to see, you know, you're not, there's a little bit less risk in that way. I think it probably hurts you more because of the lack of spreading out the cap hit than it helps you. But Kopitar comes off a pretty reasonable deal for the team there. But I mean, he gets 6.8 is a fair, you know, he's really ascended to become a different player over the course of that contract. Kopitar is going to get offered big money. My sense is that he will stay there for a little bit less money.
A little less than $6.8 million per season? Or a little less than what he'd get
yes,
on the
yes,
open
yes.
market?
I mean, I think we're talking...
So he'll take a quote-unquote hometown discount.
Stamkos, we're talking 10 to 12. Kopitar, we're talking 8 to 10.
8 to 10, so that
oh,
high.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you're talking about a guy who can play a physical game, is reliable defensively, is good along the boards, is a smart player. His game isn't relying on speed necessarily, so you shouldn't really see as a massive drop off because it's not gonna, you know, his legs shouldn't give out from under him. His style of play is still along the boards. Not to say he can't score off the rush, don't get me wrong, but I think he's gonna get $9 million probably on a 6 or 7 year deal.
So you think Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaff. Getzlaff 8.25, Corey Perry 8.6. You think he exceeds both of those contracts?
Yeah. I do.
And they're, you know, similar ages when they signed all those and everything else.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, and I drew. I think 8 to 10. I'm gonna say 9. You know, that's not. I haven't done a complete analysis of it, but that's just my feeling is he'll take a little bit less. He'll get 10 on the market for sure. Somebody will give him 10. I mean, he's a number one center. Look at Montreal. They can't find a number one center. How much Montreal give Anze Kopitar?
He's number one center. He's a little less than. He's right around a point a game.
If you put him on another team, he's going to be way over a point a game.
A team that's more offensively inclined.
Wants to play. Yeah. Now, granted, his game fits that style too, though. I mean, they do fit each other. But if he wants to just get straight points and go somewhere else, he can put up more than that.
I think also, when you talk about Anze Kopitar, similar to Andrew Ladd in Winnipeg, I think even though you're talking a winger versus a center, Ladd being a left winger and Kopitar being a center, obviously, you're talking about the two-way aspect of the game, and he's a Selke finalist. He's going to be a Selke finalist for years to come. I worry a little bit when you get into the mid-30s if you sign a guy like Kopitar, but not so much because he has been pretty durable, Rich. He hasn't missed a lot of hockey. And even though he plays a physical game, he doesn't put himself in bad positions. He's a very fit guy. So, I agree with Rich. I think you're probably looking at a 6 or 7 year deal worth $8 to $9 million, and you probably might get $10 million. And again, I think this is, you look at, Perry Getzlaff, $8 million. That looks like a bit of a discount if you're asking me. $8 million for Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaff. I think you could argue those guys should be getting $10 million. But again, they signed long term contracts. They probably took a bit of a hometown discount to stay in Anaheim.
This is who I'm comparing him to. It's Jonathan Toews. I mean, they're certainly not identical players, but they're two-way centers. Toews has 3 cups now.
Yeah.
Kopitar's got 2.
Mm-hmm. And nobody would be surprised if the Kings won this coming season.
And they're in the primes of their careers.
A year older than Toews. Okay. He's an 87 birthday. Toews is an 88 birthday. Toews has 506 points, and realize that points don't say everything on these guys.
Yeah.
506 points in 565 games. That's Toews' career.
Yeah.
Kopitar's got 610 and 683. 610 points in 683 games. I mean, he can get $10.5 million. Easy on the market.
And Richie, you make a good point because you look, we get fascinated and fixated on point totals. But on a team like the LA Kings, as Rich mentioned, they're expecting 60 to 70 points out of Kopitar. I mean, I think his career high is, 75, 80?
His career high is 76 points in 2011-12.
Yeah,
pardon me, 81 points.
So if he gets up to that, great. But it's what he offers for this team. And as Richie mentioned, he's an elite number one center. And he plays big minutes, and he checks the opposing team's best players. I mean, he can do it all. He aside from Toews, he probably is the best two-way player in the NHL, I would say.
I would agree with that. I would say it's Toews 1, or Bergeron you could put in there too. I think Kopitar is more offensively gifted than Bergeron, but Bergeron's just a heck of a player. So those three guys, it's Bergeron, Toews, and Kopitar are the best two-way players, two-way centers in the National Hockey League, I think. And I think if you're picking players, the best centers in the league, Crosby's 1 still. I think you have Toews probably 2, Stamkos 3, or Kopitar 3. Like, I think that's, and then Malkin. I mean, that's those 5.
Let's not forget about my boy Getzlaff either.
And Getzlaff. Like, 5, 6. Those are 6 guys. I'm taking Kopitar over Getzlaff, though, and you guys know I like Getzlaff. I really like Getzlaff.
Oh, I'm not. But I like Kopitar, but maybe.
I really like Getzlaff. I always have. You guys know that.
There's no wrong answer there.
But those 6 guys. I mean, he's in that conversation. So the longer you get, meaning every year that goes by, you're just going to get more money.
Richie, I'm taking you as my number one line center.
Get your dialing fingers ready. 780-1290. We'll do caller number 3. You'll win 2 tickets to see Puck Talks Live coming up September the 15th. Richie's one of the panelists. 780-1290. Caller number 3 right now here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's go to break.
The Curve Crew are back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Big congratulations to Adam Waldner. He was caller number 3. He won the 2 tickets to Puck Talks Live coming up 10 days from now, September the 15th. Tickets available at pucktalkslive.com. Richie Pollock is going to be one of the panelists at that fine event, and we'll give away another pair of tickets next Saturday on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Don't have a cow, man.
Exactly. You got 2 days left. Today, tomorrow, and then Labor Day Monday, Burger Week. I guess that's 3 days technically. Today, tomorrow, Monday, Burger Week still going on. I was there yesterday for lunch. I got to try the Don't Have a Cow Man. It was a fantastic burger. I really am upset that I missed out on the on-air eating of the burger last week on the program.
Well, you know who wasn't upset was Rory, producer Rory, because right. He had your burger.
Well, of course he should have.
So we were actually pretty happy that
yes.
You weren't here.
Yeah, well, you guys were happy that I wasn't here in general, really.
Oh, yeah. True.
Yeah, so, I mean, Rory was just happy that I wasn't here, and he got a burger out of it.
Yeah.
So go check him out, Bernstein's Deli. Vote for Bernstein's Deli for Le Burger Week. Don't have a cam, man. It's a fantastic burger.
You know, I was looking to vote. You have to, if you're going to go to Bernstein's, you have to download the Le Burger Week app. You go to the App Store, right, and you download it. And I've had three burgers this week. And what they do is they rank all of the restaurants, right? And then they also rank the top eaters. And there's a guy on there somehow that's eaten 23 burgers.
So really that's what you have to strive for next year during the Burger Week? Is that what I understand?
Well, I mean, it's impossible. I mean, this guy, Adam Cowell, is the guy that's in first place with 23 burgers eaten.
I think there's something ironic about a guy having eaten 23 burgers who's got the name Cow in his last name.
That's funny.
Thank you.
Well, hopefully he's eaten he's had the Don't Have a Cow, right?
Right.
So, but it's just impressive that he's had that 23 burgers in 5 days.
Somebody who doesn't have a cow in their name, then I would eat that burger.
Well, that's a turkey burger. In any event, check him out, bernsteinsdeli.com, for the last couple days of Burger Week. Henrik Zetterberg, speaking to Ansar Khan of mlive.com, sort of says, you know, long and the short of it is that it's going to be a good thing for the Detroit Red Wings to get a new voice behind the bench. That maybe, you know, the team was a little bit tired of Mike Babcock and his hard line and his hard driving ways. And, you know, a bit of a hard ass as a head coach, Mike Babcock certainly has that reputation. Mm-hmm. So Henrik Zetterberg saying, you know, totally respectful about Mike Babcock and how good of a coach he is, but at the same time saying that I think for the organization, he thinks that it's going to be a good change for the team.
I think one thing, the first thing I thought of when I heard this quote was, you know, 8-year deal in Toronto. You know, that's a long time.
It's a long time for anyone to be a head coach anywhere.
And especially with the pressures of Toronto. So that's the first thing I thought of. But Henrik Zetterberg is a warrior type of player. I mean, you know, he plays center wing. He plays in all situations. He's got a lot of respect, I think, for the game, and I thought it was interesting. I think one thing, Drew, and you guys know that I think Mike Babcock's best coach in the league, but I think one thing that the players, it appeared to start to kind of bother them a bit, how much attention he was getting, almost like they were playing second fiddle to the coach. That's never a good thing unless your coach is taking the pressure off occasionally. Mm-hmm. I think here is just everywhere they went, it was a Mike Babcock thing. And they're probably thinking to themselves, well, hold on a second here. Who are the guys who play for Mike Babcock who are the ones who got him the cup? There aren't as many of those guys left. But I think part of that plays into it, and they rather get rid of that whole dog and pony show. Again, I don't think that says anything about the fact that Mike Babcock's a tremendous coach. But I think that the attention and it's, you know, and if you listen to Ken Holland speak, clearly, you know, they had their differences, which I think is good. Creative differences are good in making sure you get better. But Ken Holland was appeared to be, in my opinion, to be of the opinion that the Red Wings teams over the past number of years have underachieved. And he thought they were better and should have gone farther. So I think everybody there reached their breaking point. Ken Holland, the players, Mike Babcock, and they probably chose a good time to go their separate ways. I think Babcock's going to do a great job in Toronto. If it lasts for 8 years, I'd be surprised. But I think he's going to do a great job in Toronto. I think Jeff Lash will probably do a really good job in Detroit. They have a nice young group of players. And they certainly almost knocked out Tampa last year.
Yeah, and could argue should have.
Maybe ought to have. Yeah, exactly. So I think I like it. Again, Zetterberg, I like how these players are being honest.
Yeah, and the comments were a little bit surprising to me, Richie. But if you listen to Mike Babcock's comments after the Red Wings were defeated by the Lightning in seven games, You know, you remember the speech about talking about how the veterans, really the younger players had to kind of pick up the slack of the veterans. And he was almost kind of saying that Zetterberg and Datsyuk can't carry this team on their back anymore.
That's exactly what I thought he was saying.
Right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
And
yeah.
I don't think Zetterberg and Datsyuk would have liked that. I don't know if they would have listened to it. I don't know if the players listened to all of these post-game scrums and everything.
Well, in that article, Zetterberg talks about how when you're not in Detroit, you don't even listen to it.
Right.
It's when you're there. So imagine what Toronto would be like.
But, you know, looking at this team, and, you know, Henrik Zetterberg and Pavel Datsyuk are obviously still leading this team, and they, you know, signed Dan Cleary to a one-year contract again yesterday. Nice for him to get one more contract, but...
Did we say that 4 years ago?
The point being, Richie, that, you know, how many more years are Henrik Zetterberg and Datsyuk going to lead this team? Probably two or three more years, and then you're going to go in a different direction. So, for them... They're looking at this, a new coach coming in, Jeff Blashill, who obviously has a great reputation in Grand Rapids, bringing up a lot of these players that are currently on the Detroit Red Wings roster, right? So you got to think that they're going to like to have a new voice in there because they know that they've only got a couple years left. This team isn't going to be happy with going out in the first round again. These guys want to get one more Stanley Cup. These players, who are both surefire Hall of Famers, these guys both want to... get back to that level where they can compete for the Stanley Cup again. So that's getting into the second and third rounds.
Yeah,
that's right. Where they want to go. And then obviously on to the Stanley Cup finals. They want to win a cup.
Sure.
And, you know, we could sit here and argue about whether this Detroit Red Wings team is good enough. But they were a goal away from beating the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Mm-hmm.
So one game away. So, I mean, you're talking about a team that even though, you know, they didn't get there, they're still a pretty good team, and they're only going to get better. They're still young, and, you know, I like the Brad Richards and Mike Green signings, and, you know, Henrik Zetterberg touched on that, guys.
He did, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, a little surprised that I don't think by any means he's throwing Babcock under the bus. This is a guy that has a lot of pride. You know, he's one of the greatest Swedish hockey players of all time, and he's sane, and he's being honest, as Rich said. He's speaking from the heart, and he's saying, we're kind of happy that we have a new coach coming in. And I agree with Richie. I do think Mike Babcock, even though none of the players or Ken Holland is ever going to say this publicly, I do think that his leaving, that kind of impending situation was a free agent coach, I think that did kind of have a negative impact on the dressing room.
By the way, looking at the Detroit Red Wings roster and looking at the wide open East, if those young guys that everyone has a lot of high hopes for, you know, are as good as people think they're going to be.
If they get goaltending, they can beat anybody.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good roster.
Yeah, they like Dylan Larkin as a guy they drafted in 2014. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This Teemu Pulkkinen guy who I don't know a lot about, but he tore up the AHL. They really like him.
Yeah.
The Detroit Red Wings have done a better job than any other team in the last 30 years at developing players. I think that's unquestionable.
I think it's a fair comment. Pass it forward. Started on September 1st. Yep. We'll talk about it next with Kalen Qualley. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
One final segment on this Saturday morning. It's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Daryl Lennox is in town. If you've never seen Daryl, he's absolutely hilarious. One of the sort of the comedian, a pro's pro. Any sort of cliche along those lines, check them out. Get out of the rain and get into Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Tickets at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
As we do every September, we're pleased to welcome to the program the founder of the Pass It Forward Hockey Equipment Program, our good friend, Kalen Qualley. Kalen, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Drew.
How is the golf game, Kalen?
We're mid-round right now. I'm just on the eighth green right now.
I got to say, given yesterday's rain, I'm impressed that I think you would imagine the entire golf course would be a water hazard.
No, it's cart paths only, and It just means you try and follow the card path or you're getting a good walk-in.
Okay, sounds like a reasonable way to spend your Saturday morning. Kalen, obviously we bring you on every September this time of year to talk about the Pass It Forward hockey equipment program. Is this year 5 at this point in time?
7.
Seven.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's
holy
five,
year
five.
Seven. My God. My apologies. Time has certainly flown by. For those in our audience who might be new to the program, why don't you give a quick synopsis of what it's all about and its origins and everything along those lines?
Yeah, you bet. So the program, like I just mentioned, 7 years running, established in 2009, 2010, and the idea behind the program is to collect used hockey gear that otherwise goes unused, redistribute it within Winnipeg to kids that may not otherwise get the chance to play hockey. And we've had a lot of support from Illegal Curve, a lot of support from our partners, Perth Dry Cleaners being an important partner, because you can bring that used hockey equipment to any Perth Dry Cleaners during the month of September.
Kalen, how did the program begin? I know we ask you this question every year, but it's always good to refresh. You know, what was the impetus to the program? Why did you decide to found it? And you know, talk about its origins and sort of where it's gone since then.
Yeah, for sure. So the program I started when I was in Red River College's Creative Communications program, and it met a requirement where we had to do a large scale project. It could be a fundraiser. You could write a novel. That wasn't quite up my alley. So given my background and really my passion for the sport of hockey, I knew it had to be something hockey related. And thinking back to when I was young and when I first started playing hockey, I recalled that my parents either acquired equipment from neighbors or bought used stuff from Played Again, Source for Sport. And it just occurred to me there's a lot. Hockey equipment is a valuable commodity, and there's a lot of people's homes and their basements and their garages. So this really provides an opportunity for people to pass that equipment on and know that's being put to a good use.
Kalen, I know you guys are accepting donations and used hockey equipment, but for those who want to participate, you want all hockey equipment. It's not just one specific type. So it obviously it could be for kids and adults alike, but you know, you're obviously accepting all hockey equipment as part of this Pass It Forward program, right?
Yeah, that's right, Ezzy. So the equipment goes to kids as young as 6, 7 years old up through high school age. So really that the size of equipment can be youth size, intermediate, adult size. I know there's a lot of maybe beer league hockey players that have upgraded their equipment, but their old stuff is still very usable. By all means, bring that stuff into Perth Dry Cleaners.
Just you don't want Ezzy bringing in empty bottles there, Kalen, right?
Pardon?
You don't want Ezzy bringing in empty beer bottles.
No, I can't picture any kids strapping those on getting on the ice.
I take those into the vendor.
Kalen, I was going to ask, you know, you've been doing this for, as you mentioned, 7 years now. Have you gotten some feedback from some players youngsters who've received this equipment years back maybe, and that's kind of elevated them in terms of their ability to play for a longer period of time?
Yeah, maybe not any direct feedback from those players. I mean, they're pretty young, so they're not exactly reaching out to me, but I've because of the partner that we use to distribute the equipment, I've had the opportunity to see the equipment used firsthand, and it's really gratifying to see that end where the equipment goes and to know it's actually being used. So our partner is the Winnipeg Jets Hockey Academy through the True North Foundation. So yeah, I've like you say, Richie, I've had that opportunity to see where the equipment ends up, and it's it really brings everything full circle.
Kalen, I saw that you've partnered up with Oak and Ore and Top Shelf Hockey. We've got to know the Top Shelf Hockey guys, I guess. Can you share with the listeners what kind of prizes are available when you donate gear to Perth Dry Cleaners?
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up. I'm very excited to work with both those local companies. They're great brands. They make really top quality stuff, and I think people in Winnipeg should seek them out. So with every year, with our donation period in September, every donation to Perth Dry Cleaners enters you into our donation contest. And this year, Oak and Ore and Top Shelf have very generously contributed merchandise from from their online website. So I believe Okinor's putting forward a $100 online gift card, and Top Shelf is giving a stick and a hat to whoever wins that donation prize.
That's terrific, Kalen. Yeah. Hypothetically speaking, I want to get involved. I want to get access to some of the equipment that's being donated. What's the best way for me to go about doing that if I'm a parent of a young hockey player looking to break into the game? Times might be a little bit tough and it's hard to afford some of the equipment. How do I go about getting some of the equipment that's being donated?
Yeah, great question, Drew. We get those inquiries every year, and we are more than happy to try and oblige when possible. So by going to the website, you can find some contact information. The one that you need to know, info@passitforward.ca. Reach out to us. Let us know about who it is that you want to get into hockey, and we'll try and connect and make it happen.
What's the website, Kalen?
Passitforward.ca.
Passitforward.ca. All the information there. All donations can be given at any of Winnipeg's Perth's dry cleaners. Kalen Qualley, the founder of the Pass It Forward Hockey Equipment Program. As always, Kalen, you're doing great work. Not so sure about the golf game, but you're doing great work when it comes to hockey equipment and keeping the youth of Winnipeg well-equipped for the upcoming season.
Appreciate it, Drew. Thanks, guys.
Take care, Kalen. Thanks very much.
Go get him, Kalen.
Thanks, Ezzy.
That's Kalen Qualley, the Pass It Forward Hockey Equipment Program. We've been involved since really day one, going back to my days at Perth's Dry Cleaners.
And back to Red River.
And back to Red River College, exactly.
Where this all began.
It's a great program,
absolutely. Yes, it is a great program that Kalen's spearheaded. And nice to see that you do it as your... as your big project in creative communications, and he's kept it going for all the years afterwards, so you can see how important that program has been for the city of Winnipeg.
Do we have time to do cheers and jeers here?
I suppose we could, if you have somebody you want to cheer or jeer.
We got to do the big cheer.
That's the only cheer that matters. Richie's brother, Adam Pollock, is getting married this weekend to Samantha Gorlick, so, I mean, it's all about them this weekend, so we're looking forward to celebrating their wedding tomorrow night.
Should be awesome. There you go.
There you go. A round of applause. How's the speech coming, Richie?
It's 60% done.
60% done.
I got to finish it today.
Okay.
I'm not feeling very good. I might have to have a turkey burger to get me back.
There you go. Exactly. Turkey. Look to the burger. The power, the healing properties of the turkey burger from Bernstein's.
Drew, I've been told that there's a fenced off area that you can't access the poutine later tomorrow night.
Just right from the heart, Richie. Right from the heart.
You know I only like cookies when it comes to late at night and it comes to, you know. Anyways, it's going to be a great wedding. I know that I was in Montreal last week for a wedding. And 2 weeks ago, as you had given a shout out to Jonathan and Leba on occasion of their wedding. The number of people that came up to me at the wedding in Montreal that said that they love to hear the shout out from you there. So it was very impressive. So
I love to give out the love.
You love to give love.
Yeah.
As he's a lover. That's what we can say about that. That's it for this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to our guests, Tracy Myers from CSN Chicago. Big thank you to Bryce Salvador, retired NHL player. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on iTunes and on TSN1290.ca. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba, and Royal Sports. Stay tuned for Toronto Blue Jays baseball here on TSN 1290. And if it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.